to see you. Thank you for coming. Oh, it's nice to be back. It's been about a month, and I'm really happy to be here with you. So how our morning will go is we'll start shortly with an arriving meditation. I'll offer some Dharma thoughts. We'll have a longer meditation. We'll have time to talk with each other throughout, which I really love to do. I really love to go back and forth and really integrate this time as a time for study and practice and discussion to talk about whatever we're doing. It's really, it's the way to go, I think. But you know, the other thing I really want to say is that I am calling in today from the town of McKinleyville, California, which is right next to Eureka, about 300 miles north of San Francisco. And I am at a friend's house who has generously given me their space because I have been experiencing completely unreliable internet for a few weeks, including, you know, the internet people saying we're coming out today and then they don't show up. And so this is the unreliability of everything, right? And the beauty of having good friends who say, yes, please come here. We have a signal today. You can be here. So I want to honor that and say thank you. And also just to recognize the land that I am on today, which is the unceded land of the Wiat. And I am here where my friends are in old growth redwood trees. And it's quite beautiful. And it's poignant. You know, there's so much stewardship and so much caring for the land from generation to generation and eons before. And so that's where I'm calling from and feeling very grateful that I get to do this. So as we start in this arriving meditation, you might reflect for yourself, where are you and who are those who have supported you in where you are? All right, so let's find a posture that you can welcome yourself into, in which you are comfortable. Let's take a couple of breaths together to arrive and settle, really sensing the inhale coming in and the exhale going out. And sitting in a way that keeps you alert and not stressed, relaxed. And sitting for you might mean reclining or standing or even walking. See if you can get a sense of your body from the inside. And adjusting in a way that you're comfortable and at ease. Your posture will adapt to that. Breathing in, know you're breathing in. Breathing out, releasing, softening. Settling. Remembering why you're here today, what inspired you to say, I'm going to go to Wednesday morning Sangha? And whatever that is, let that be a support to you. Let that accompany you. And then also recognizing what did it take for you to get here today, to clear your schedule, to make space for this time, offering yourself an internal bow of recognition and gratitude for giving this to yourself. There's an inherent kindness to this time together, that every moment of mindfulness is a moment of kindness. Every moment of kindness is a moment of mindfulness, arriving and settling, willing to be here, is inherently kind. So be in your body in a way that you know you're in your body. Breathing and knowing you're breathing. We'll begin with this poem called This Life by Karen Cassinger. The silence waiting my awakening has been steeping through the night. It has its own scent, palpable and unfolding. The cradle still rocking, the bough unbroken, even as sounds enter the stillness of the morning, the bough is bending into a new season of greening. I am awakening into a life that has been steeping for 8 decades. The days are as savory and satisfying as lapsang shu cham, redolent with memories of the joys and sorrows of living in family, of working in the world, of being present to the living and dying, of being at home on this earth. My cup is filled with gratitude for sweet solitude, for the gift of a life long enough to have become kindness. And as you hear the sound of the bell slowly coming back and arriving. Good morning again. I am awakening into a life that has been steeping for 8 decades. My cup is filled with gratitude for sweet solitude, for the gift of a life long enough to have become kindness. Maybe we don't have to wait 8 decades to know a life that is steeped with gratitude and kindness. We don't have to wait. And this is why we are here. But what a beautiful reflection to understand how a life seeps into us. What are we learning? What are we gaining? You know, what are all the ways we're present for our lives? What are the ways we're not? But we don't have to wait. And this beautiful Dharma practice invites us specifically not to wait, to be here now. Last week, I was traveling a little bit and got to spend the Passover Seder with my son and his wife, which was of particular happiness. It was really lovely to get to be with them. And, you know, the story of the Seder is one of moving from bondage to freedom, oppression to freedom. And we can think about that in terms of our Buddhist practice as the continual movement from confusion to clarity, confusion to clarity. What are the ways that we get stuck, that we can't see clearly, that we are oppressing or binding ourselves? And over again, this practice invites us to peel back the layers of what is getting in the way of our clarity. What are the causes of dukkha, our suffering, and how can we be with the natural fact that dukkha happens, but also how to be in relationship with what is difficult? And it was particularly poignant at this Seder. There were four generations, and it wasn't four generations for me, but my son and his wife's best friends came to the Seder, and they have two children, one who is four and one who is a one-month-old newborn. And it was pretty sweet to be around a newborn, but the grandmother was there and the great-grandma was there. And to get to see the great-grandmother hold her great-grandson for the first time, I just fell to tears. It was so sweet and a privilege, you know, the kindness and the gratitude to watch this 83-year-old woman hold a one-month-old great-grandchild and to not miss that moment, you know, to not miss the moment of what that meant for all of them, but also for us, for me. We need to pay attention like that. And it, you know, it just strikes me that what we're really doing over and over and over again is companioning each other. We console each other. We celebrate each other, which are all iterations of connection. And that's what we're doing. We are connecting over and over and over again. So at the end of the poem where it says, "My cup is filled with gratitude for sweet solitude, for the gift of a life long enough to have become kindness." That's our instruction, right? Isn't that our instruction? So however you are, wherever you are in your life, whatever age you are, you can do this now to steep your life in whatever it takes for you to let it become kindness. It's so much easier that way. It's just a richer life. So in Zen tradition, you know, Zen is just like every tradition is full of stories, full of pithy life instructions that are sometimes given at the end of a Zen master's life. And I have no idea when this instruction was given, but this is a beautiful story that has gone down through the ages of Dharma teachers, but it originates from Zen master Zenkei Shibayama. And I found this, well, I've heard Sylvia teach on it, and I found it through many other teachers. And there's a phrase that is used frequently that says, "Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever." Now, how about if we approach our lives like that, which is so difficult? You know, I was pretty grumpy when the cable people, the internet people didn't come and show up yesterday. So I would be at home able to teach. And then when the person on the phone told me, "Oh, they came and nobody was home," I had a lot of complaints because I was home all day and I wasn't able to say, "Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever." So there's so many things that get in the way of this. So here's the story. There was a young man, I'm just going to read it to you. There was a young man who had tried many strategies for happiness and realized that his life needed to change, but he didn't know where to start. He heard about a woman who sometimes helped people, and in desperation, he went to visit her. He said, "I'm amazingly unhappy, and you are my last chance." I'll tell you, if somebody said to me, "I'm amazingly happy, and you are my last chance," I would be scared. I'd be like, "Oh God, you know, I can't take that on." We can't take on anybody else's happiness. But here's the story. "You are my last chance. The problem isn't that I'm selfish and I'm lazy as well. So I won't be able to follow any discipline you set for me, meditation, yoga, that sort of thing." "That's okay," she said. "I can give you something that will work. It won't be hard, but you have to promise to actually do it."
Well, what is it? She said, oh, no, no. I'll give it to you if you promise to do it first. He hated this and went away, but was so desperate that he came back. And he said, so how long do I have to do it for? And she said, a year. You have to do this for a year. You know, and this is without him even knowing what this thing is that he has to do. So in the end, he said, okay, I'll do it. Tell me what it is you want me to do. It's easy, she said. Whenever someone asks you how you are, you say, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. No matter what. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. That's it, he said. Yep, off you go. He traveled and languished, and he was just as unhappy as ever. And finally, the year passed, and he returned. Well, here I am, and I'm just as unhappy as ever. You said this would work, but it hasn't worked, not one little bit. Immediately, she said, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. He began to weep and to laugh. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever, he shouted. I got it. Thank you very much. I have no complaints. So what else is there, right? What does it take for us to be able to meet our lives exactly as they are without all of the interfering? It shouldn't be like this. I want it like this. Give me more. Give me less. To say, thank you very much. I have no complaints. And mean it. How do we mean it? I think this is so much of what our practice is. And this is where I get to this place that I've really been spending a lot of time on. And if you've been in classes with me, you've been hearing me talk about this. I think it's very important. Whatever the teaching is, whatever the lesson, whatever the thing is that is happening in our lives, and we're maybe approaching something new, maybe it's something we've been working with for a while, there's a way in which we start with understanding a given teaching. So what does this teaching actually mean? Thank you very much. I have no complaints. Well, we know maybe in a cognitive way, in an academic way, that this is a definition of gratitude, a willingness to just be here. But it's one thing to understand it, and it's certainly another thing to experience it, right? And there can be a very real separation between how we understand something and how we experience it. And this is why the Buddha taught, get to know it from your own experience, your direct experience. Because what happens when we put together understanding and experiencing, there's a realization, right? There's a realization of, oh, this is why this matters. And that's what he's describing. That's what happened to this young man in here, is that, okay, fine, you want me to say thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. But when he sees it mirrored back to him, when he sees, oh, now I get it. Whatever the thing, that whatever happens for us, that we experience something directly and we say, oh, I get it. There's a realization that happens, because then that teaching becomes real. It becomes valuable. And out of that, there's an embodying, an embodiment. And we could call that awakening, that putting together understanding, experiencing, realizing, and embodying. And the embodying is that these teachings are available to you. They're available to draw on, that you remember in a difficult moment, thank you very much, I have no complaints. That is a moment of awakening, in my view. This is how I'm working with my practice now. So I want to share that with you. And you can see if it works for you. Like, what are the teachings that you hear over and over again that maybe go right by you? What are the teachings that you know that have become embodied teachings in you that you rely on because they're refuges, right? A refuge, something that is a reliable place that you can draw on that holds you. So this teachings that say every moment is a moment of kindness, and every moment of mindfulness is a moment of kindness. It is. Every moment of kindness is a moment of mindfulness. They're two sides of the same coin. They're not even sides. They're just completely integrated. In order to show up wholeheartedly, it takes a willingness, a presence of mind, a kindness, curiosity, mindfulness, but it also takes kindness, to be willing to say, okay, I can do this. I'm choosing kindness over resistance. I mean, you know, resistance can come in lots of different ways. And sometimes saying no is kind. So I'm not saying don't have boundaries. Don't say yes to everything when you know it's wrong for you. I'm not really going in that territory, but you can see how the relationship of mindfulness and kindness work. And it goes beyond that. And this is a really important point. And this comes from the teacher and Pali scholar, Andrew Olensky. Every moment, every mindful moment in which generosity displaces greed, compassion takes the place of hatred, and insight dislodges delusion, is a moment in which we are awake. This is what we are doing. You know, the natural toxins, poisons of greed, ill will, and delusion are natural. They come and go. We all live with them. But in those moments where they dissolve or they're in abeyance, or you have the presence of mind and capacity of heart to be in states of non-greed and to not let the ill will take root, where you can feel it. We all can feel it coming up. But the decision to not get caught in it is a moment of awakening, because that's where the clarity is. That's where the confusion to clarity, the bondage to freedom happens right there, which is in fact the shift from the second noble truth that says there's a cause of our suffering, which is our gripping onto how we think and want things to be or how we don't want them to be. And the third noble truth that says, okay, I can be with this. There's a little freedom there. It doesn't mean that the difficult thing isn't there. It is, but we have a different relationship to it. Are you with me? Do you have any questions on this? Any comments? Okay. I want to make plenty of room for us to talk with each other today. But if there are no questions, comments on that, let's move into our meditation. With this sense of, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. Sitting in my life, as long as it's been gratitude and kindness, can arise. We can make space for them to arise. We don't have to wait for our eighth decade. You can do it now. So finding a posture that works in your body. Trusting that your body will find a posture that is right, adjusting when you need to, whether you're seated or standing or reclining. And simply breathe and know you're breathing. Be in your body. In a way that works for you, it might be sensing the places where the body is touching the furniture or the floor, the body touching itself. Sensing into the state of heart and the state of mind this morning, or whatever time it is for you. And letting whatever is here to simply be here. Meeting yourself just as you are. From Eddie Hillison. Through me course wide rivers, and in me rise tall mountains, and beyond the thickets of my agitation and confusion, there stretch the wide plains of my peace and surrender. All landscapes are within me, and there is room for everything. With each breath softening, making space for the whole of yourself. Finding that place to rest your attention, whether it's on the breath, somewhere in the body, sound, maybe your metta practice or a different practice that you have. Whatever it is, let your mind rest there. Let it be your refuge for this meditation, a place that's easy to be, where you can be held, where there's comfort. And when the mind drifts away and you notice it, please come back. Be gentle and kind, yet persistent with yourself. And begin again. There is room for everything. And we'll sit quietly. If you're noticing any tightness in the body, maybe a clenched jaw, furrowed brow, tight belly,
With your next exhale, see if you can invite a little softening. Any amount is the right amount.
as we continue to sit quietly. If there are uncomfortable thoughts, distracting thoughts, sensations, emotions, anything that is arising that you would prefer was not, maybe offering this phrase, "Thank you very much. I have no complaints," which is the same as a bow to what is here. A recognition, even an allowing, this is what is here now, knowing that everything arises, hangs out, and then passes away until the next thing comes. Letting your meditation practice be this training for being with everything, making room for everything. And then coming back to the breath or the body. Welcoming and allowing a steadiness to arise. wherever you are placing your attention, be it the breath or the body, or a different point of focus, see if you can get a little closer to it, being very, very intimate with the experience of breathing or the experience of sensation in this body, following the breath all the way through, following the sensation and all of its changes, being fully present in this body, in your own heart mind, right now. Try to stay there, very close to your experience. It's not a tight holding, but it's an intimate companioning of yourself with what is happening right now. And drawing the awareness now into the space of the heart. However you sense your own heart center, maybe the center of the chest, noticing the center of the upper back or the upper side ribs. And if you like, even placing a hand on the chest, over the center of your chest, as a way to directly connect the warmth of your own body with the warmth of your heart. Your inherent goodwill, your inherent goodness. Remembering the beautiful invocation in many Buddhist texts, O nobly born, knowing you're nobly born, you who are the sons and daughters of the awakened ones, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, remember who you are. The luminous mind, the goodness of your heart. Trust it. Return to it. It is home. Maybe you notice if your hand is on your heart, you notice the movement of the chest beneath your palm as you breathe in and out. The aliveness of this body right now. And if you like, imagining drawing fresh breath, fresh nurturing energy into this heart space from every direction, the back of the heart and the front, the sides, diagonals, even above and below. Drawing in this fresh nurturing breath energy into the heart space, letting it fill the entire space. And as you breathe out, back out into every direction, the heart relaxes, becomes a little more spacious, but also has more capacity. This is the heart's breath. Continue like this for a little bit if you like. Fresh energy in, releasing energy out, but also offering the goodness of your being out into the world. Breathing like this. And then if you like to begin offering yourself some metta phrases, any you like at all, or you can try these. May I feel safe and protected. May I be at ease. May I feel safe. May I be well. May I be at ease, noticing what that's like on the inside. Do you sense a sense of safety, strength or wellness or ease? Any amount is the right amount. This practice that invites us to just do two things, to begin and keep going, to say thank you, to recognize, to acknowledge everything in our lives, to develop a kind of strength in this presence of mind and heart, to be with our lives as they are, make changes accordingly. But this is a deep recognition of our life. This is called Instructions on Not Giving Up from Ada Limon. More than the fuchsia funnels breaking out of the crabapple tree, more than the neighbor's almost obscene display of cherry limbs shoving their cotton candy colored blossoms to the slate sky of spring rains, it's the greening of the trees that really gets to me. When all the shock of white and taffy, the world's baubles and trinkets leave the pavement strewn with the confetti of aftermath. The leaves come, patient, plodding, a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us, a return to the strange idea of continuous living despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. Fine then, I'll take it, the tree seems to say, a new slick leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. And as you hear the sound of the bell, letting it permeate inside of you, thank you, Carlita. So you probably know or have figured out just through this morning that I like to teach through the portal of poetry, because I think that poems give us a language, give us access to parts of ourselves that we may not articulate otherwise. And it's the same, I think, with any art form, that art brings us into our hearts, can help us make sense of our lives that maybe we don't in this more cognitive way. So bear with me, and maybe you too love poetry or are coming to know that through coming to classes with me. This piece from Eddie Hillison, which is not, it's prose. Through me course wide rivers, and in me rise tall mountains. And beyond the thickets of my agitation and confusion, there stretch the wide plains of my peace and surrender. All landscapes are within me, and there is room for everything. I love this piece because I think this is truly what our practice is offering us. Can we make real space for everything? And sometimes we can't. You know, sometimes it's just too painful. It's just too hard. It's not what we're up for. Don't have the space for it. But this is the practice that helps us get to that. When I said in meditation, can you make space for whatever is here right now without the voice, the interfering commenting voice of my meditation should be like this, but it's like this, or my mind is all over the place, or I'm falling asleep. All of the various permutations of what happens in meditation practice, and to just see that what we're doing in meditation is a training for being present for our lives. Because what is happening internally, we close our eyes, if you're focusing on the breath or whatever it is, it's the same as when we're doing whatever we're doing off the cushion. Can we be truly present and come back over and over and over again? And then this amazing poem from Ada Limone, who is the U.S. Poet Laureate, is part of this. This is a poem that I read every April, because this is when the cherry blossoms bloom, and this is when they make a mess on the street. And it's beautiful. I love this. Patient plotting a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us, right? What does winter do to us? The metaphor of that. A return to the strange idea of continuously living despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. How is it that we just keep getting up day after day despite everything? Fine then, she says. I love that. Fine then, a little snarky. And if you've ever listened to Ada Limone, she's very funny. And she can be a little irreverent and snarky. I'll take it, the tree seems to say. A new slick leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. What does it require of us to say, I'll take it all? That's not easy. We don't want to feel pain. We don't want to feel the things that are really difficult. But this practice says it can hold us as we turn towards the truth of our lives. We can do this. We don't necessarily hold it. We don't necessarily take it, but the training is to meet it. Right now, it's truly like this, whatever the this is. And so this expression of from Eddie Hillison, the thickets of agitation and confusion, that's the greed, the ill will, the delusion, and the cultivation of their opposites, the space for everything, the peace and the surrender. Fine, then, I'll take it all. That's the thank you very much I have no complaints whatsoever. That's another way of saying, I think exactly the same thing. The deep bow of, okay, this is it. So it's often said that the Dharma is symbolized in the symbol of a bird. One wing is the wing of wisdom. The other is the wing of compassion. And the body of the bird is this body of courage, this body of courage. And there's a beautiful teaching from the Indian sage Nisargadatta that says, wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. And between the two, my life flows. So let's take this apart in the realm of what we've been talking about, this deep bow to the nature of our lives, that this is what is happening. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. And between the two, my life flows. So these are the wings of the bird. What does it mean? How do you relate to being nothing and everything simultaneously? Maybe that is akin to the teachings on emptiness and form. You may have heard that teaching. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. This table that I'm sitting at is made of wood, which used to be a tree, which had leaves, which was part of the soil, which grew because there were clouds and rain and nurtured soil. So this table, this thing, this form is actually nothing because it's everything. It's made up of every conceivable constituent of nature, of water, of cloud, of weather, of nutrients, etc., creates this plant that then becomes this table. And that's how I relate to this teaching of form, that we too are empty of any solid anything, right? This body is constantly changing. It is a process, whether it's circulation or the musculoskeletal system or the nervous system or all the fluids that go through this body, how we are made up of everything else. And so I think that that's part of this, I am everything, I am nothing. This Japanese death poem that says, empty-handed, I entered the world. Barefoot, I leave it. My coming, my going. Two simple happenings that get entangled. Isn't that fabulous? Empty-handed, I entered the world. Barefoot, I leave it. My coming, my going. Two simple happenings that get entangled. What is this entanglement, right? This life. When we know, right, there is the beginning, there is the end, there is everything in between. How are we going to make the best of this to stay very present for our lives, to bow to it all, to not be in an argument with the conditions of our lives, even when they're really painful? This is our practice. And it's so natural to push away what we don't want. To say, how can this be happening? This is happening. I mean, we could talk about what's happening with guns in this country. How is this possibly happening? Every day, a new headline that is unimaginable to me. And my response to it is I have to keep practicing. I have to keep doing this practice that teaches me the difference between clarity and confusion, being non-harming, knowing when pieces of ill will, like when I was on the phone with the internet people who weren't showing up and telling me that they did show up, I could feel all of that ick in me. And I wasn't 100% nice to this guy on the phone. Oh, I wasn't at the end of the conversation. And I said, you realize this is not personal, right? And he said, yeah, I got you. I got you. And it was a really nice way to end that conversation.
because we're human, right? So we are going to feel all the everything and feel the anger and the ill will. And, you know, my coming, my going, two simple happenings that get entangled, it isn't simple, is it? It isn't. I mean, we can be real about this, but these poems, this art form helps me make sense and connect the reality of my life with this, with the beauty, because there's a lot of beauty and there is also a lot of pain for all of us. So nothing. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. I think this is the wisdom of anatta, not self, interconnection, the truth of karma, translated as action. One thing leads to the next, to the next, to the next. That we are simply a drop in the ocean of everybody else. Yet we can be accompanied. We are connected. We're connected to all of the sorrows and all of the joys. And even though my story and my experience may be different than yours, we have this commonality of just being a human being in a complex world. There's this great story that Sylvia tells about being on retreat at some point with Joseph Goldstein. And he was walking in front of her talk house, and she was a retreatant and she was behind him, but she was overhearing the conversation. And what she heard was Joseph saying to this other person, you know, nothing is worth thinking about. And she paused, and the other person paused, and he said, no, really, nothing is worth thinking about. And he wasn't saying there's nothing worth thinking about. He was saying nothing as a thing, as a noun, is worth thinking about. And that sent her off on a whole exploration. And for all of the probably thousands of people she's told that story to, including me, how has that landed? What is this nothingness, this emptiness that holds everything? It is worth contemplating. And I don't have an answer for you, except to say, think about it. Have experience of emptiness, openness, that everything contains everything. How do you square that? And that I do think is the piece of that I am part of everything. You are part of everything. We are part of all of this together. We actually really are. Our presence affects each other. We need each other. I cannot be me entirely without you, and vice versa. This is how this works. And everything, if love tells me I am everything, and between the two, my life flows. Life is so precious and so temporary. I think what this is saying, love tells me I'm everything. We must love. Love matters. This whole practice, I think, comes down to self-love, because we are reconciling that we are mortal. So what else is there to do in this temporariness of life but to be as present as we can and to truly be kind, to love ourselves, to learn how to love others, to know that what we do matters, committing to being present in our lives. And this is the gratitude, the kindness, the metta, the compassion, the joy, the equanimity, all of the flavors of the Brahmaviharas, these heart practices that help us have the bravery and courage to show up for this life exactly as it is. And to know also in this piece about life exactly as it is, I think it's very important to also say that it's not a resignation. Oh, it's just like this. This is my lot in life. This is what I have to do. There's a recognition of, well, this is what my life is like. Is it really supporting my well-being? Are there changes that I need to make to live a life that is more in line with who I am? And how do I cultivate the courage to do that? Norman Fisher, fabulous Zen teacher, you may know.
He says that what our instruction is, one of the primary instructions, is to strengthen our ability to face with love whatever happens next. That is equanimity, isn't it? You know, Gil Fronsdal defines equanimity as let's see what happens next. But I like this one a lot. To strengthen our ability to face with love whatever happens next. Because that is when we say, thank you very much, I have no complaints. That is this deep turning towards. And so when we bring this willing, open heart to every aspect of our lives, it expands our capacity, our resiliency, this equanimity. It is the profound acceptance of everything. The way greed and ill will and delusion are part of us and the ways we learn to uproot them. And it's not easy, right? It's not easy. It's said that the very last of these poisons, they're known as the three poisons, to get uprooted is ignorance, and that ignorance is the source of the dukkha. And when we say ignorance, what we're talking about is not seeing clearly, delusion. You know, the filters, we all have filters through which we see our lives. And it takes a lot of courage to say, wait a minute, is this old conditioning? Is this an old belief system that actually doesn't make sense anymore? What are the belief systems we've each been raised with? What were the conditions of our families, of our education, of our communities that were just part of what happened? And do we get to a point where we say, wait a minute, I don't think this makes sense? You know, when do we question something that has just been institutionalized, woven in, baked into us? And so I love the part of this practice where the Buddha says, find out for yourself. I'm not the one who's going to tell you. I'm going to tell you that I think that this practice works. The practice of cultivating enough awareness to know what supports your well-being and what decreases your suffering, to even be able to recognize the habits of the mind that cause the suffering. And when we find that out for ourselves, and we're part of a supportive community, we have more capacity to make those changes, to say, yeah, I'm not going to do that thing anymore. To see the core, these sometimes are called core limiting beliefs, deeply held beliefs that don't serve us anymore, but to actually have the courage to say, that does not work, I'm not doing that. And this practice has given that to me. I hope it's given that to you and continues to do that. I think that's why, I think that's the awakening. That's the promise of this practice. And then it makes sense to say, fine, then I'll take it, the tree seems to say. A new slick leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. And of course, there is the old adage that says, it's not what I wanted, but it's what I've got. Right? Of course, we don't want all the pain, all the icky, sticky stuff. We don't. But we're not exempt. We are so not exempt, and it is so absurd to think that we might be. It is just ridiculous. So, Cassie, to help your mom who is upset with herself for falling, you know, there's this thing about why me, but why not me? The profound, I get tears saying this, that the profound truth of what it means to be a human being is that we fall down and get hurt, and it's not our fault. What if it's not our fault that the stairs were rickety or slimy from the mold, from the rain, from whatever winter did to us? Like, shit happens, right? It is that. I remember when Wes Nisker, another teacher, said, you are not your fault. This was in a retreat that I was attending. And it kind of spun me around. I thought, what does that mean? I am not my fault. And I can't tell you that I entirely get it, because I know I'm responsible for my actions. But I also know that the truth of karma, the truth of interconnection, of nothingness, means that so many things happen because other things happen and they collide. And sometimes they come together and fit beautifully. And we are, you know, the only thing we have control over is what we do. I don't even think we have control over our thought, actually. I mean, we can train our minds, we can train our hearts towards this kindness, towards thankfulness, towards generosity, towards all of it, but we're still going to get the ignoble thought. It's going to come through us. And then we go, oh yeah, ignoble thought. And we don't let it send down roots. But we are going to have that gunk that comes through. And so we're not our faults. We get exposed to different input that stimulate different thoughts, but we don't act on it and we learn not to act on it. John Tarrant, who is a Zen teacher, he said this about gratitude. Gratitude is what we feel for every single thing that occurs, since we would rather be alive than not, would rather be here than not. And perhaps our only job is to celebrate being here, being happy for each other. The capacity to companion, to console, to celebrate, to connect. And I know that sometimes we feel like we don't want to be here. But ultimately, I hope that we really do. That life is painful, but life is also beautiful. So this nothingness and this everythingness, back to Eddie Hillison, to experience that there is room for everything. This is this profound letting go into whatever is here, which I think is the love. And within that is the true, I think, and deep experience of the truth of impermanence. Everything we know and love and experience has a beginning, a middle, and an end. We will lose everything and everyone we love, whether we die first or they die first, or the circumstances of our lives change, which they do constantly. So I think this teaching of wisdom tells me I am nothing, love tells me I'm everything, is a deep teaching on impermanence. How do we square this? And I've been feeling it lately in my own life as, because that really is true, there's a great unburdening that is possible. What can I choose to let go of that I don't have to do anymore, or things that I've convinced myself I have to do that I actually don't? It's a figment of my own mind. This continual letting go, letting be, and making space for something else to come up. So I'll give you a really specific example of what I'm talking about, which makes me a little bit scared to say this. So I have been teaching every Monday at 4:00 for 18 years. Same time of day, same day of the week. And I'm going to let that class go for a little while. Tom, don't kill me. It's time to let it be on hiatus for the summer. And it's so scary for me to say this out loud, because when you do the same thing at the same time of week, the same thing for 18 years, like, who does that? And I'm starting to, I do it. That's who does it. But I'm noticing that something else needs to happen that is happening in my own teaching that I don't even know exactly what it is. So I'm going to make some space and see what happens. And I'm still, you know, teaching plenty and I'm totally available. But this is a really hard thing to do because I have a core limiting belief that says when you commit to do something, you do it. Okay. So how do we be realistic about that? And I sort of set my own body clock for Mondays at 4:00. I've been doing it for so long, but it is time to shift that up. So this is this letting go, to see that when we let one thing go, something else can arise. And I don't know what that other thing is. So there's some trust that is going to, that is required of me to do this. Suzuki Roshi says, true renunciation is not giving up things of the world, but knowing that they go away. True renunciation is not giving up things of the world, but knowing they go away. Life shifts and changes, and something else can arise. Something beautiful can arise. So I'm going to end with this piece from Terry Tempest Williams that is, these are sort of watchwords for me. Terry Tempest Williams, if you don't know, is a fabulous writer. She's in Utah. She's a naturalist, but she's absolutely brilliant. Look up her work if you're moved to. She says, we are eroding and evolving at once. We are eroding and evolving at once. What is real? Given what we know, I trust what I see. Weathering agents are real. Water freezes and shatters stone. Rocks fall from the force of gravity. New rapids appear in rivers. Storms gather and floods roar through dry washes, cutting and scouring a wider channel and changing the course of water. Perhaps this is what is happening to us. We are being worn down to our essence as we are forced to change course. We need not lose hope. We just need to locate where it dwells. We are eroding and evolving at once. What erodes? What can evolve? What do we see as true? We are being forced to change course collectively. And there's hope in that. Where do we want to plant our flag? What is important to you to act on? So wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I'm everything. And in between the two, my life flows. So thank you for listening today, for being here. I'm going to jump off because supposedly the cable guy is going to be at my house pretty soon. And I have to hurry up and get home because my husband has to leave. So they can't tell us that nobody was home. And it's about a 15-minute drive and I got to be there. I am so grateful for each of you. Thank you so much for coming today, for joining Sangha, for bringing your heart to this time of practice. We offer up the goodness of our practice for all beings so that all beings everywhere are peaceful and happy, have enough to eat, have enough shelter and enough food, are part of a welcoming community, so all the suffering can be eased. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.